For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It's January 22nd. We are in Parashas Tazria on page 616. And tonight's learning is for Fushlema Fritzipara Bas Rachel. Okay. Page 616, Pasuk Mem Zion, verse 47. Tonight we will discuss the tzaras on clothing. We've discussed tzaras on a person's body, and in various places on the body have different laws. And now we discuss tzaras on clothing. V'habeged kievo nega tzaras, clothing that has a
An affliction
of tzaras, okay. Beveged tzemer o beveged pishtim, on a garment of wool or a garment of linen. Ovish si ove erev, or in the shisi, which is the warp, and the erev, which is the woof. La pishtim v'la tzemer, either for linen or for wool. Ove or, or in leather. O b'chol malaches or anything made out of leather. So we have wool and linen, the warp and the woof of the wool and the linen, and leather and anything made out of leather. These are the things that can have tzaras. Now, most people today do not know what the warp and the woof is. The truth is, I only really know it in the Hebrew of the Shisi and the Erev. I don't really know it with the English terms, but I will do my best here with my inimitable artistic ability.
Yeah. Oh yeah, there is an explanation down here.
Okay, well, we're going to draw it, actually, with the loom. But when you weave, so you string across the loom a bunch of strings that go, this is going to be really... that roughly go in this direction. And this is all through the loom. And the loom, the purpose of the loom is to make alternating threads go up and down. You know, its alternating threads are up and down, and the loom will continually change which threads are up and which threads are down. That's the purpose of the loom. So the ones that are strung through the loom, we'll call that the long way, that will be the shisi, which is the warp. That's the long way. And then what you do is you have the woof, which is connected to an apparatus called a shuttle, and you throw the woof, as if it's done by hand, and you throw the woof back and forth, the short way, the width of the garment, so that you'll throw the woof this way, and then you'll use the loom to switch which of the warp is up and which of the warp is down. Then you'll throw the woof the other way, and you'll switch it again, and you'll keep throwing it back and forth, and that way you'll end up with essentially what you want when you weave, which is that each thread is going up and down, over and under, over and over and over and under. That's the purpose of this system. So you end up with having the short way, the same string ends up going, and that is your woof. Obviously, it's all going to be scrunched together so that you end up with a garment. Okay, so the long way is the shisi, which is the warp, and then the short way, back and forth, that is the Erev. Erev, which is the woof. Okay, now, they don't look the same. The warp and the woof don't look the same. The
same as what?
As each other. The threads are made differently. The warp, the shisi, are finer threads. than the Erev. Don't ask me why. I don't know the science behind weaving. But I do know that in order for it to work properly, the Erev, the woof, has to be a thicker thread than the shasid, than the warp. And the Gemaras discuss the...
Makes it ribbed.
What's that?
I said it makes it ribbed.
Makes it ribbed. Okay, it makes it ribbed.
Look.
Whatever that means. So, okay. So, the Gemara discusses in spinning thread, which is, and was certainly by hand in those days, an art, how to do it properly. And one has to spin threads properly. So spinning shasi is the threads are thinner, and spinning of the Erev, the threads come out thicker. For example, the Gemara Maseches Ksubos discusses the expectations of the work that a wife does in the house in a marriage, where the expectation is the husband is working outside the home and the wife is working inside the home. One of the things that a wife is expected to do inside the home in that formula is to be spinning these threads, the shasi threads and the Erev threads, the warp and the woof. And apparently it was something which was skilled labor, which everybody knew how to do, or people were trained to do that in those days. So what's being said over here with Tsaras is that sometimes Tsaras will afflict only the shasi or only the Erev. It can afflict one or it can afflict both. And then it can afflict one or the other. So the tzaras will be considered to be, I don't want to call it valid tzaras, but it will be legal tzaras, halachic tzaras, when found on the entire beged, or found only on the shasi or on the erev. That would also be a form of tzaras. So far, we've only discussed where the tzaras is found, on what materials. So we said on wool, linen, on just the warp or just the woof, on leather. Now, wet leather, of course, doesn't have warp and woof because leather is not woven. Mm-hmm. Leather comes as, it's the hide of an animal, and it comes as a piece, as a uniform piece. And anything made out of leather as well will be subject to tzaras. So anything not listed here would not be subject to tzaras. So a garment made out of a different type of material, certainly a synthetic material, would not be subject to tzaras. But even if it's a natural material, but it's not one of the ones listed here, then it would not be included in the rules of tzaras. Now, tzaras on clothing, on a person's body, as we mentioned before, there is the halachic status of tzaras, and that follows all the parameters we've mentioned until now. But in addition to that, there is also the medical status of tzaras. Tzaras is, after all, a skin disease, and a person can be afflicted with a disease of the skin, which looks very similar to halachic tzaras, but doesn't fit exactly the parameters we learned until now, and the person will not have the halachic status of tzaras, will not be tameh, will not have to leave the camp, at least not halachically, but may still very well have an affliction of the skin to the extent that they are very sick, perhaps dangerously so, and they may be very contagious to the point where people want to stay away from them. That's very possible, because there's a medical side to tzaras as well. As we mentioned earlier in our shiurim about tzaras, we mentioned that although it is well known that we do not eat meat and fish together, because it is considered to be a health risk, according to the Gemara, but few people know what the health risk is. And the Gemara actually says the health risk is tzaras. That's what it's dangerous for, to get tzaras. Now, clearly, it's not an aveira to eat meat and fish together. So when we say that it's a health risk for tzaras, it doesn't mean it's a health risk for the halachic status of tzaras. It's a health risk for the medical status of tzaras, for the for the skin disease. That's what it means. So we're dealing with a dual issue over here when you're dealing with tzaras of the skin, and that is the medical condition and also the halachic condition. Tzaras on clothing, and for that matter on a house as well, which we'll get to in Parashas Mitzora, those appearances of tzaras are only relevant from a halachic standpoint. They should not be possible to show up for any other reason but the halachic reason. Now, we know that a house can get mold or something like that, but that's explainable. That comes from something, moisture or whatever it is. But to get an outbreak of tzaras on clothing or on a house, that ought to only be a halachic discussion. Now, there will be blemishes, as we will see, that will not have the tumah of tzaras. The kohen will investigate, and either will fit the parameters or will not fit the parameters. But there's nothing else to speak about. Either it is tzaras, or it is a discoloration that has no other explanation. There's no medical condition over here. So tzaras of clothing should be something that is not found except in a halachic context. Therefore, as we will learn also with tzaras of the house, tzaras of clothing only has a halachic status of tzaras when it is in Eretz Yisrael. Outside of Eretz Yisrael, there is no discussion of tzaras of the clothing. Clothing tzaras, as the Ramban writes, only applies in Eretz Yisrael. Furthermore, at least in regard to wool and linen, is a discussion whether it's true about leather as well, but at least in regard to wool and linen, tzaras only applies when the wool and linen is white. If they've been dyed a different color, and then some discoloration takes place, that is not going to have the status of halachic tzaras. It won't even have to be taken to the kohen. It is dismissed as some fluke discoloration and has no relevance to tzaras. Tzaras is only true on a white wool or linen garment. Then there can be a discussion about tzaras, which we're about to get to, about what the parameters of that tzaras is. As I said before, on leather, there is a discussion in the Mishnayos whether or not it is limited to only white, I shouldn't say white leather, but only leather that is its original color, or leather that has been, I don't think you dye leather, I'm not sure exactly how you color leather, but whatever it is, however, do you dye leather?
It can be.
You can, okay, so the leather that has been,
chemically changed.
Yeah, no, that a human being has changed its colors, the colors of the leather, so there's a discussion in the Mishnah whether that would still fall into the halakhic parameters of tzaras. But certainly wool and linen has to be white in order for it to be subject to the discussion of tzaras. Fine. So that's the material that you find the tzaras on. Now, what does the tzaras look like? So Memtes, verse 49 on page 618. V'ayah nega yirakrak o adam dam. So the nega, the affliction, is either yirakrak. Yirakrak comes from the word yarok, but it's a double language. It implies, as it says in English, a deep yarok, or adam dam, which means a deep adom. Now, adom means red. Yarok, although it is translated here as green, I mentioned to you before that yarok really connotes a greenish, yellowish. It's not really a green like we would picture. It's not the color of what we would call a deep green. It's more a deep yellowish greenish. It is a deep color, but it's a color that is close, that one could call it a deep yellow rather than a deep green. It's got that kind of middle tinge to it. So those are the two colors of tzaras on clothing. No other color, no other discoloration will fall into the parameters of tzaras. So this is completely different than tzaras on a person's body, where the main color of tzaras on a person's body was
white.
That was the main color. On hair, we had a little bit of a different discussion, but the main color that we are worried about with a person is white. When it comes to clothing, it's this deep yellowish greenish or this deep red. Those are the two colors that fall into saras of clothing. So the affliction is either deep green yellow or deep red. Babeged ova or on the clothing or on the leather. Ova shesi ova erev or on the warp or on the woof. Ova chol klior or all of the utensils made out of leather. Negat saras hu. That is an affliction of saras, if that's what it looks like. Viharah es hakohen, and it shall be shown to the kohen. Viraah kohen es hanaga, the kohen will see the affliction. Vihiskir es hanaga shivas yamim, so he will put it away for 7 days. So here, unlike with the tzaras of a person where the person himself is quarantined, you don't have to quarantine the person over here, it is the garment that is put away for 7 days. It's not put away outside the camp, it is just put away someplace for 7 days. Viraah es hanega bayom hashvi, so the kohen will see the nega, the affliction, on the 7th day. Ki fasa hanega babeged, the nega, the affliction, has spread on the clothing. Now you know already from before that spreading, that's a big problem. Spreading is a big issue. Once it spreads, you know you're in trouble. So spreading on the clothing, ova shesi ova erev, or on the warp or on the woof, ova or on the leather, lechol hasheye yaseh arlim lacha, for anything that the leather is used made into something that has use. Tzaras mam eres hanega, it is a, they translate it as a bright tzaras. How do they translate it here? They call it a malignant saras. Okay. I mean, mamaris means that it shines, meaning it stands out. Tamehu, it is tame. Now, Rashi does tell us that the word mamaris, besides it coming from the word ma'or, which means light, from the word or, but a me'era, same spelling, mem aleph resh, and then a hey, me'era means a curse. So the Torah is deliberately using a word that has the dual meaning, light in the sense that it has a striking appearance, it kind of pops out at you, but also it is a curse because it is a curse to this garment, as we're going to see what happens with saras on a garment. Nun Beis, verse 52, Visaraf es habeged, you have to burn the article of clothing. Oes hashesi, or the warp. Oes haerev, or the woof. Batsemer ovapishtim, either the wool or the linen. Oes kokli, or any item made out of leather. Ashiebo anaga, that has the affliction. Kitzaras mam eresi, for it is a, I don't want to call it malignant, a bright or a cursed saras, bo'esh tisareif, it shall be burned in fire. So what happens is you have to burn it. There's nothing to talk about. Once it spreads, you have to burn it. Now, the Gemara does derive from here that if there is, if sometimes on clothing, you'll have a main material that the clothing is made out of, and then sometimes the secondary. My daughter would be able to tell me what the trimming. Thank you. The trimming of the clothing, maybe of a different material, and it's just on the edges of the material. So in those cases, the trimmings do not need to be burned with the clothing. They can be removed from the clothing, and only the main part of the clothing be burned. Now, if you have various threads mixed together, they're all going to get burned, because it's part of the main part of the clothing. But the trimming of the garment can be removed if it is of a different material. At any rate, the clothing is burned. So that's straightforward. But what happens if it doesn't spread? Nun Gimel 53. Vimirea Kohen, if the Kohen will see, Vine Lofa Saha Nega Babeged, Ova Shesi, Ova Erev, Ova Choklior. But the Nega, the affliction, did not spread in the garment, in the warp, in the woof, or any leather utensil, garment, whatever it is. So it didn't spread. Now, I realize that Torah is constantly repeating all of the materials. I don't have a good answer for you why that's happening. That is curious why the Torah has to continually mention the materials over and over again. So it did not spread, but it's still there. So what's the halacha? V'tziva ha-kohen, the kohen will command, v'chibsu esa sherbo ha-naga, and they will wash that which has the affliction. So first of all, you wash it. This does not mean put it in the mikvah. It means literally wash it. V'yiskiro shivas yamim shenis, and then put it away for a second set of 7 days. So it gets put away for day 8 to day 14, similar to a person when there's an inconclusive first week, then the second week it gets put away as well.
There must be significant to the hierarchy of the way this goes, the way it surrounds, you know, from the person.
Yeah, we haven't discussed that. I mean, we're all familiar with the going from the house to the clothing to the person, but let's wait till we get to the house tzaras before we discuss that. Okay. Yeah.
You know, it occurred to me here, did the Kohen have a way of marking the boundary?
Good question. You're pointing out that when we had tzaras with the hair, in order to distinguish where it was before and where it spread, he shaved the hair around the affliction, left two hairs on the border to see if it's spread or not.
Because here, he either has to have a very good memory.
Right, right. So here the Torah does not require that. If you'll recall, even with the hair, in the first week, he didn't do that.
Right.
Right? Which, as we mentioned, that left a little bit of margin for error. Right? It would, in other words, we pointed out there that the first week, where there was no need to shave the hair around the affliction, there, in order to notice its spreading, would have to be a more dramatic spreading, because you don't know exactly where it was. Whereas the second week, he had to shave around the nega, around the affliction, and then even a tiny amount of spreading, even two hairs' breadth, a tiny little amount of spreading, would be noticeable. Here, since the Torah did not require, as you're pointing out, did not require any marking of the nega, it would therefore imply it would have to be a more significant spreading, which would be noticeable to someone who had seen it and made a mental note of it and then looked later. But you're right. An incremental spreading would not be noticeable and therefore would not be a problem. Right. Very good observation. Okay. So they wash it and they put it away for a second set of 7 days. Pasuk Nun Hei, verse 55. The coin sees it after it was washed, so it's a week later and it was washed. So behold, the nega, the affliction, did not change its appearance. It remained exactly the same. But it also did not spread. So nothing good happened. The affliction didn't go away, but nothing bad happened either. It didn't spread. The tamehu, that is considered tameh. Ba'esh tisrafenu, it needs to be burned. Pecheses hi, it is, that's a good word for that. It literally means it's a hole, but
penetrating.
It's a penetrating affliction. Okay. Bekarachto ovegabachto. Now, they translate karachto v'gabachto, a worn garment or a new garment. Karachto means an old garment, and gabachto means a new garment. I'm going to spend a little time on those two words momentarily, but first let's get the rest of this pasuk. So here, it did not change its appearance, which means it didn't get lighter. We'll talk about it getting lighter soon. But it also did not spread. Well, that doesn't matter. The garment gets burned. If you'll recall, with tzaras on a person's body, we had various types. But the regular, typical tzaras, we pointed out, a person gets 2 weeks, 1 week, nothing happens, you wait a second week. If nothing happens, he goes to second stage tzaras. It actually has to get better after a second week. It has to diminish after a second week in order to not go to second stage tzaras. Here we find the same thing. It's not good enough that it didn't get worse. It has to get better. Now we had other forms of tzaras, like with a wound or with a burn or something like that. In those cases, if it remained the same, then he was okay. Right. It had to get worse in order to go to second stage tzaras. So this mimics the run-of-the-mill tzaras on a person, where after 2 weeks, if it remains the same, that's bad. It has to actually show improvement to get better. Now, it's also important to note that we don't have a besides spreading, there's nothing else that makes it an automatic burning of the beged, of the garment. Remaining the same after 2 weeks, but before that point, only spreading. Remember, with saras on a person, if a white hair developed, or if a piece of non-saras skin developed in the middle of the affliction, we had various signs that made it worse besides spreading. Here there is none. Here it begins as saras, it begins a certain size, and either it spreads or it doesn't spread. That's the only thing that the Kohen is looking for. Now, of course, he's also looking for if it goes away, or starts to diminish. That's of course good, but there's no other sign no other blemish or otherwise appears in it to mark it as worse tzaras. Now we're going to see even a greater connection between tzaras on the garment and on a person's body presently when we discuss these words bekarachto o begabachto. So I want to get back to that. I want to move on, and we'll come back to these two words at the end of the pasuk, of the end of 55, which again means worn beged or new garment. It means it doesn't matter whether it's an old garment or a new garment, the same rules apply. But we'll come back to that. Nunva 56. Vimra'a kohen, if the kohen saw, vine keha hanega, but the garment, the affliction has actually become lighter. It's become, a better word is dimmer. It's not as deep a color as it was before. Achareyu kabesa, so after it was washed, means it's been a week and it's been washed and now it's gotten better. Then vikara oso min habeged, I should say a week or 2 weeks. Vikara oso min habeged omino or omina shesi omino erev. He tears out only that part from the garment, from the leather, from the warp, from the woof, that gets torn out. So rather than burn the entire garment, only that piece gets cut out of the garment. In today's day and age, where our garments, first of all, are mass-produced, second of all, clothing is abundant. People have in their closets outfits upon outfits upon outfits upon outfits. In stark contrast to the way the world used to work, used to be a person had perhaps three sets of clothing. They had what they wore when perhaps two sets of regular garments that they wore during a week, and then they had special garments they wore for Shabbos. That's what it was. The Gemara, for instance, in Maseches Ksubos, speaking about the Mishnayos, speaking about the ksuba that a man writes for a woman when they get married. And one of the things, of course, the Torah says a husband has to provide for a wife is clothing. So the Mishnayos speak about that. What does he provide for her? He has to provide for her new clothing in the winter, and then she wears that same clothing in the summertime, because it's understood that clothing begins to wear out over time. New clothing is presumed to be thicker than older clothing. So he has to provide for her new clothing at the beginning of each winter. She wears it through the winter. By the end of the winter, it has now, it's not threadbare, but it has gotten less thick and less warm. And then she wears the worn out garments in the summertime. And then in the winter, he has to make her new thick clothing to wear throughout the winter. The Mishnah specifically point out, he may not get away with giving her new clothing in the spring, because that doesn't help her. Then the clothing is too hot in the summertime and too cold in the wintertime. That doesn't work. So you see, the presumption of the Mishnah is that it's one, that the garments are all worn through the winter, and then through the summer they're worn down. That's the presumption of the Mishnah. That was typical. So for us, that's totally, foreign to our thinking. And if the clothing starts to wear down, then you throw it out. You can't even donate it anymore once it starts to wear down, right? They always say there is no market for used men's suits, right? Because men wear their suits into the ground. So once, there is no market for that. Women's clothing, there's a market for used clothing, but not for men's brands, no such thing, right? But in their day, it really, up until mass production of clothing, which is the late 1800s, early 1900s, when that started to happen, until that time, that's not the way it was. So for us, we're thinking about, what are you going to do? You're going to cut out this, right in the middle of the garment, you're going to cut this big hole in the garment. What's it going to be with the garment? Well, that's no big deal. You patch it. Right? In their day, that was a typical, of course you patch it. What else are you going to do with it? Right? You're not going to throw it out. Right? So you're going to spare the garment. So for us, we read this and we say to ourselves, what's the difference between cutting out the middle of the garment or burning it? It's all the same. Right? No, it's really not all the same. That there is, to salvage the garment is valuable and it can be patched. Pasuk Nun Zayin, verse 57. So he cuts out that part of the garment, and that part is destroyed or burned or whatever it is, but the garment itself is spared. Vim teiro e'od, but if it is seen again, babeged, in the garment, ovashesi, ova erev, ova chol klior, in the garment, in the warp, in the woof, or any of the leather items, porachas he, then it is a, I would have said blossom, an eruption. Okay, it's an eruption. Therefore, ba'esh tisrefenu, es asher bohanaga, then you have to burn whatever has the affliction. So there's no, you can't salvage it if it comes back. Very similar to tzaras with a person, where the person, if the tzaras went away, they're spared going to the second stage of tzaras, they remain in first stage tzaras, but if it comes back, oh, second stage tzaras immediately. There's no grace period of a week or 2 weeks. Same thing over here. If the tzaras comes back after it was cut out of the garment, and then it comes back, there's no grace period. It's an immediate burning of the garment. The garment, the warp, the woof, or any item made out of leather, that it gets washed, and the affliction disappears, not it became dimmer, it actually disappeared, then it is washed a second time, and it is completely tahar. There's no cutting out anything from the garment, it is perfectly fine, it is completely cleansed from the tzaras. We make a point, something out over here, a very important point, with washing. And I know we don't regularly do this. We usually focus only on the either the English or perhaps some of the Hebrew. Occasionally we look at a Rashi. Tonight I would like you to notice something in the Targum Unkelus, in the Aramaic translation of Unkelus. Let me give you just a little bit of an introduction to Unkelus, since we don't regularly do this. Let's at least be on the same page of what Unkelus is doing over here. Unkelus ben Clunicus, as the name suggests, was a Roman, and he was not Jewish. He was the nephew of Titus, the one who destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. He became a ger. He was inspired by the Jews, and he decided to become Jewish. A whole story involving the mezuzah and his becoming a Jew. In his becoming a Jew, he became a scholar, and he became a scholar of note. When the Torah was given on Har Sinai, along with the Torah came explanations. We know the Torah Sheba'al Peh, the oral Torah, was given along with the Torah. And Torah Sheba'al Peh, which means oral, was just that. It was not meant to be written down. It included the laws that we find in the Mishnayos, the laws that we find in the Gemara. It included a lot of things. Of course, those things were all written down later because we started to forget. But it was meant to be an oral transmission. The Aramaic translation of the Torah contained, that was given, it was given on Har Sinai, and it contained within it explanations. It's not really a translation. It's more, every translation ends up choosing between different possibilities. And therefore, it ends up being it ends up being an explanation. At Har Sinai, the translation that Unkelus has over here was given to Moshe Rabbeinu as well. Now, I don't mean to say that it was given in Aramaic. The Jews at the time spoke Hebrew and probably Egyptian. But the Aramaic is a similar language to Hebrew, to Lashon HaKodesh, And this particular translation was also given to Moshe Rabbeinu. It does not mean that it's an exhaustive translation, meaning it doesn't mean there is no other way to translate the Torah, but it is considered to be the primary translation of the Torah, is Targum Unclus. That translation of the Torah, over time, was forgotten. It wasn't completely forgotten, but there were parts of it that were forgotten over time. When Unclus became a convert, became a ger, and became a scholar, he applied himself to rediscovering the proper Aramaic translation of the Torah. In those days, the Jews did speak Aramis, Aramaic, because they had been in Babylonia, they'd been in Babel, and that was the main language. And even though the Romans appeared to destroy the second Beis HaMikdash, but as you probably know, even during the second Beis HaMikdash era, the Jews primarily still lived in Babel, in Persia, to the east of Eretz Yisrael, and Aramis, Aramaic, was the main language. That is why some of the prayers that we have, that we say in Shul, are in Aramis. For example, Kaddish. Kaddish is in Aramis. Yikum Purkan is in Aramis. Birich Shemei is in Aramis. We trip over those words. But you have to remember, that was the English translation of their day. That's what people knew. That's what they usually spoke. That was their spoken tongue. They were all familiar with that language. So Unclus wrote, he rediscovered the proper or the main translation of the Torah and wrote it in Aramaic, in Aramis, which was the language of the day that most Jews knew. It would be like the art scroll of his day. Yeah. But unlike the art scroll, this was actually given at Har Sinai. So therefore, Targum Unclus is considered to be authoritative, and it is considered to be, if one knows Aramis, if one knows Aramaic, it is considered to be a better translation than any other translation you can find. That is why there is a mitzvah, at least for men, to every week read the parsha Shtayim Mikra Ve'echad Targum, to read the Chumash, the Parsha, twice in the Hebrew, and once in the Targum Unclus, in the Aramaic translation. It would be similar to telling somebody today, read the Hebrew twice and read the English once. Because Unclus' translation is the best that we have, if a person knows Aramis, then that's better than reading the English translation, because it is the main translation and the most authoritative. In the event a person does not know Aramaic, it is acceptable for them to read the Hebrew twice and the English once. That would also be a way of fulfilling this mitzvah. Although, as we often tell men who are trying to do this mitzvah, you might do yourself a favor by reading the Aramis, even though you don't know what it means, because that's how you'll learn what it means. It'll be a reverse, because really it's meant to be a translation. You'll learn the language by reading the English and also reading the Aramis, and you'll figure out what the Aramis means. Okay, so now if you notice, in the Aramis, in Unclus, looking at Pasuk Nun Ches, verse 58, I'm going to read the entire thing in the Aramis, and I'll translate as I go along. Ulavusha Oshisya O'arva, a garment, or the warp or the woof. Ochol man dimshach, or anything made out of leather. Di sichavar, that will be washed. Viadei minhon michtasha, and it will disappear from them the affliction. V'yitztabat tinyanus, it shall be washed a second time, v'yidkei, and will be pure. It'll no longer be tame. Now notice that the word wash, the verb to wash, comes up twice in the Pasuk, and in the Aramaic, one time it's translated, it's written as sichavar, which means washed, and the second time it's v'yitztaba. In the Hebrew, the same verb is used. It says tichabes and vichubas. same root, chaf beis samach. So in Hebrew, it's the same word, techabes vechubas. In the Aramaic, it's techavar and yitztaba. So let me write that down just so that we have it in case you're not able to read it with me. This way you'll have a better sense of what's happening here. In Hebrew, we have the same root, chaf beis samach, which we'll transliterate it as kabes, which means to wash. But in the Aramis, the first time the verb used is, I just make sure I spell it correctly, it's chavar, is chavar. Chavar. And the second time it is tzava. Both mean to wash. They both mean to wash. Why does the Aramaic translation use a different verb for washing and in Hebrew it's the same one? And the answer is because, you know, this word chavar also besides meaning to wash, but in the noun form in Aramis, the word chavar means white. To whiten. The chavar means to whiten, to wash, to whiten, to clean it from its blemishes. That's what the word chavar means. Tzava, it's true, it does not mean chavar, right? But it means to immerse. You see, because the first time the Torah says it in this pasuk, it means to wash. The second time it says it means to immerse it in the mikvah. In both cases, you're taking the garment and getting it wet with water. That's what you're doing. But in the first one, you are washing it. In the second one, you are immersing it.
But it doesn't say in the pasuk.
That's right. In the Torah, it's the same word. Let's read that in the Hebrew again. Any type of garment or leather, whatever it is, asher techabes, that was washed, v'sar mehem anaga, and the nag of the affliction disappears, v'chubas shenis, it shall be washed again, but differently than the first time. The first time it was washed, as in rinsed or whatever, something like that. Now it is immersed. Vitahara, now it is tar. The second time you got to put it in the...
That's what the English says.
That's right. They got it from Unculus. That's where they got it from. Exactly. So really, the second one is put it in the mikvah. The first one is washing. Do it in your sink. The second one is put it in the mikvah. So here, Unculus gives us a window into these two words so we understand what the real intent is. Let me read the last pasuk, and then we're going to go back to those two words of v'karachto u'v'gavachto. Zos taras nega tzaras, this is the law of the affliction of tzaras, beged atzemer o apishtim, in a wool garment or a linen garment, o ashesi o ha'erev, or the warp or the woof, o kol kli or anything made out of leather, letaharo o letamo, to make it, to purify it, or to make it tame, to make it, as they translate it, as contaminated. Now, going back to the end of Pasuk Nun Hei 55, where it says, Bekarach To, O Vegabach To, in its worn garment or its new garment. So there are other words for old and new. But the Torah chooses to use this phrase. Now we had these words before regarding Tzaras. We had these words back on page 616, when a person will shave their hair, will shear their hair from their head, and then they get saras where there used to be hair. So it says in Pasuk Mem Beis, verse 42, V'chieva karachas ovagabachas, same words as we have here, and it says at the end of it, B'karachto ovagabachto, that same verse. 42, Membeis. Now there it means the back of the head or the front of the head. Karachas means bald from the back, from the middle of the head and back. Whereas gabachas means bald from the front of the head and forward. Here the Torah is borrowing those terms to mean old garment and new garment. An old garment is one that is behind, that is from the back. It was already for a while. Whereas a new garment is in the front. It's in front of you. It's in the future. The past is an old garment, that's the back. The future is a new garment, that's the front. So the Torah here is taking, I guess, poetic license, using a term, nouns, that really refer to the back of something and the front of something, to instead mean that which is old and that which is new, that which is the past and that which is the future. That's an acceptable thing to do. The question is why the Torah does that. Yeah.
Do these words actually mean front and back? I mean, what's the best translation?
I believe that's the best translation. Rashi tells us with the clothing, he says, let me find that Rashi here.
I understand what you're saying about the clothing, but
Rashi says, "Ki'ilu nechtav." It's as if it's written be'achariso o be'kadmuso.
Yeah, and that's what we would usually see.
It's right. It's before and it's after. Mm-hmm. Right. It's really before and after.
Right. So this is kind of an unusual choice of words.
Yes.
Before and after.
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
Right. It's the previous and the future. And that's the idea over here. So why does the Torah do that? Why would the Torah use such an unusual phrase to mean old clothing and new clothing? It just doesn't seem. I mean, it's so. It seems very.
It's a stretch to do that.
Yeah, it's a stretch, and it's a choppy way to write. Like, you know, you got to figure it out. So the Gemara says, because the Torah wants to connect tzaras of clothing to tzaras of the body for something which has not been said explicitly. We've seen that there are similarities, but there is a rule that we know of with tzaras of the body which the Torah is coming to teach us also applies to a garment, even though the Torah did not say it explicitly. What is that rule? We learned with the tzaras of the body that if the tzaras spreads to the entire part of the body, it covers the entire body. We had said perhaps not with the head and not with the feet, but most of the body is completely covered with the tzaras, then just the opposite. Then the person is tahar. Then they are not tamei, which is counterintuitive. You would have thought the further it spreads, the worse it is, which is generally true. But once it covers the entire body, then the person is tahar. We discussed at the time why that should be the case. So the Gemara says the same applies to a garment, where as long as the tzaras is only covering a portion of the garment is tamei and will be burned. But if the tzaras covers the entire garment, if it spreads not just a little bit, but it spreads to cover the entire garment, then the garment is spared. It is not tameh, it is tahar, it will not be burned. So we learn this because of the choice of words of the Torah, that it uses this funny phrase in order to draw our attention to these words, and the Torah wants us to say, what? Well, why is the Torah using those words? Didn't we have those words before with a person's body? Yes. And now we will be led to that connection between the tzaras on the garment and tzaras of the person. That's what the Gemara tells us to understand from Bekarachto or Vegabachto. That is the conclusion of Parshas Tazria. So we've covered tzaras of the body. We've covered tzaras of a garment. Now, you would expect that the next thing the Torah is going to do is discuss tzaras of a house, of a building. But that is not what the Torah does. The next thing the Torah does is discusses what is the tahara process after a person has entered second stage tzaras. Now what? What does he do when the tzaras goes away after second stage tzaras? What is the process to be reinstated to society? Which we'll see, it's going to take several steps to get there. Only after that discussion does the Torah return to tzaras and speak about tzaras of a building. So it is curious why the Torah does that. Perhaps we'll try to tackle that when we get to tzaras of a building. But Mirtz Hashem, next week when we begin Parashas Mitzora, we will discuss first the process of emerging from second stage tzaras, the worst type of tzaras, to get back to society. And after that, after a few weeks of that, we'll then talk about tzaras of a building.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.